Hi, everyone. This is David A. Fields, of course, and I want to welcome you to a rare interview. As you know, I don't promote very many people at all. I'm extremely selective about the sort of folks who I would interview and send something out to you about. Well, one of the very selective elite few is Bob Berg. Bob Berg is co-author of The Go-Giver, which is an absolutely outstanding book. It's very congruent with how I believe we need to operate as consultants. And it sold, I think, something like 500,000 copies around the world and in more than 20 languages. And he is actually releasing a new, I think, expanded version of the book. And that was a good opportunity for Bob and me to reconnect and have this interview, which I want to share with you. I think you'll find what Bob has to say extremely useful, extremely valuable for you as a consultant, as an independent consultant who wants to grow your practice. I think you'll really enjoy this. Of course, feel free to send comments. I hope you do send comments and post comments and enjoy the interview. Bob, you know I'm a huge fan of your book, of The Go-Giver. Here's what I would love. Before we even get into the book, I think my readers and my followers would love to know a bit more about you. I mean, even where you were, where you are now, if there was some epiphany along the way that totally changed your trajectory, that would be great to hear.
Okay, yeah, I think there was. It was back when I was first started in sales. My background had been broadcasting, starting out in radio and then television. And I graduated into sales and had started because I read and studied the masters and learned from them. I'm a big believer in not reinventing the wheel, but in learning from others, people who've already been there and done it. My sales very quickly started to go, and it was working out well. However, I think my focus was still in the wrong place. And I remember going back in my first kind of big sales job. I went back to the office after an unsuccessful non-selling appointment. And I remember being ticked off because the prospect just didn't get it, right? I knew that he should buy, you know, my product because it was going to be very helpful to him, and he didn't get it. And I remember the one man who was there, he was sort of an older guy who I think was getting ready to retire, and I didn't know him very well, but I think he saw me as someone who had some potential but needed an attitude adjustment. And he said to me, "Well, Berg, first, you know, when the shooter misses the target, it ain't the target's fault." And I thought that was fantastic, first of all, because what he was telling me was, hey, you know, it's not up to them to get it. It's up to you to communicate it in a way that's understandable. And more than that, it's up to you to ask the right questions so that you will first get, you will understand what it is they want, what they need, what they desire. And then, you know, just as a consultant would, in this case, the salesperson would need to then, you know, match the benefits of the product or service with their needs, their wants, their desires. And so I thought that was a very important point he made. He also said something else, and this is what I think really was my epiphany, if you will. He said, if you want to make a lot of money in business, if you want to make a lot of money in sales, he said, don't have making money as your target. Your target is to serve others, meaning serve your customers, serve others. He said, now, if you hit the target, you'll get a reward. The reward will be money, and you can do with that money whatever you want. But always remember, the money is simply the reward for hitting the target. It's not the target itself. The target is serving others.
Right. Well, so now I want to come back to that. But before we do, to be fair to the folks who are listening who maybe are not as familiar with your work as I am, would you mind just doing a real quick review of the five laws you talk about in your book? I think you call them five laws of stratospheric success, if I'm remembering right.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's from The Go-Giver, and it's a business parable. So it's a story. And the premise of the book is really nothing more than shifting your focus from getting to giving. And when we say giving in this context, we simply mean constantly and consistently providing value to others. And the five laws built around that are the laws of value, compensation, influence, authenticity, and receptivity.
And so do the 30 seconds on each. What are each of these laws?
Sure. Well, the law of value says your true worth is determined by how much more you give in value than you take in payment. Now, that can be easily misconstrued as not a profit, but not at all. We simply need to understand the difference between price and value. Price is a dollar figure. It's a dollar amount. It's finite. It is what it is. Value, on the other hand, is the relative worth or desirability of a thing, of something, to the end user or beholder. In other words, what is it about this thing, this product, service, concept, idea, that brings with it so much worth or value that someone will exchange their money for it and be ecstatic that they did while you make a very healthy profit? And so what it means is you're giving them more in use value. As a consultant, they are paying you a certain fee, and I hope it's a high fee, because you're going to earn that fee because the value you're giving them is way above and beyond what they're paying for it. And that would be the law of value. So in any free market-based exchange, meaning no one's forced to do business with you, in any free market-based exchange, there are always two profits, the buyer profits and the seller profits.
So before we even then talk about the other laws, let me just ask you a question that comes up to me a lot, because one of the big squishy gray areas for a lot of consultants is making that transition between giving value and being remunerated for their hard work. So how does your philosophy give some clarity to that gray area?
Well, I guess I'm not really sure why there even would be confusion for a consultant in that regard, because they need to be paid, and they need to be paid well for what they're providing. You have certain knowledge, certain wisdom, certain experiences, and what that person wants is for you to help them solve a problem or to help them to attain something that they desire. And so it's very much a value for value-based exchange.
So great, and that's excellent. Let me back up then a little bit. And what happens is a lot of consultants have learned that the way you establish and nurture a relationship is by providing value. Now, clear, the people in my group, in my community, know that I don't believe you always have to bring value, some overt, extreme value to a conversation. Simply nurturing the relationship is of value. But still, a lot of them have felt like, I need to bring value even in advance and demonstrate value in advance of winning a gig. So at what point do I start getting paid?
And that's fine, because, the fact is that's okay. It's very appropriate to do that. But you also need to systemize what you do so that you're giving lots of great value. But you also know where that point is where for them to now, and they should receive lots of value anytime you are providing that, because not only are you helping them, you're helping yourself, because you're positioning yourself as the one that they now trust for additional value, for additional information. So you need to have it systemized so that you know where you draw the line in terms of what you're giving them of value, so that they have enough confidence and they're comfortable enough to know that when they make this investment with you, it's going to be well worth the money, time, energy, what have you, that they're paying.
Got it. So in the Bob Berg system, where does that occur? Where do you transition from just giving value to it being an exchange where you're being compensated?
I think it depends on what it is you're doing. As a consultant, you basically, my feeling is you should have your business systemized. So you always know the questions you're asking your prospective customers and clients to really be able to understand, again, their needs, their wants, their desires, what they would like to see happen as a result of doing business with you. And there's a time and place within that for you to give them some advice and something that, it doesn't cost you anything, but at the same time helps them right away not only learn something they need, but to also understand, wow, that person, I need more of this because this person is going to be able to really help me. Now, by the way, you may also have a free report, a free video, audio, whatever it happens to be, so that these people, so that you're giving generic value in this case, but so that it still positions you as an expert. But there's also nothing wrong with, again, depending upon your unique way of doing something, because not all consultants can be wrapped within one, you know, package. And that's why, again, I would say have it systemized so you know that cutoff point. And it's not that you say to them, okay, well, there's nothing more until you pay for it. But it's just, you know, when they have thanked you for that, or you've asked them, does that help, and so forth, and now you go into closing for the, you know, for the gig, so to speak.
Right. So it's very helpful to understand your own process. It's helpful and to have a process, which of course is a lot of what we work on, is that process. So that's terrific. I took you off sort of on a tangent.
Oh,
let's go.
Okay.
Let's go back to the five laws. You explained the value. What about compensation?
Yeah. Well, the law of compensation says your income is determined by how many people you serve and how well you serve them. So while it's fantastic to provide exceptional value to one client, that's only the beginning. You're not going to make a huge income just by doing that. Nicole Martin, the CEO in the story, told Joe the protege, the law of value, as important as that is, that represents only your potential income. Your actual income is the result of how many lives you impact with that value. So, and that's why having a good, strong referral business is so very important, because when you have referred prospects, it's certainly easier to set the appointment. Price becomes less of an issue, so you can sell on value. It's easier to complete the transaction, and referred prospects are typically already of the mindset, since that's how they met you, that you're the type of person who they refer to others. So you really want to look at the law of compensation as being not just the value you're providing, but how many people, how many clients you have.
So it's sort of depth and breadth.
Exactly.
Excellent. And then bring us then into influence.
Well, the law of influence says your influence is determined by how abundantly you place other people's interests first. Now, when I say that, it's very important to qualify that, because when we say place other people's interests first, we don't mean you should be anyone's doormat or a martyr or self-sacrificial in any way. Absolutely not at all. It's simply, as several of the mentors told Joe, the protege in the story, the golden rule of business, of sales, is that all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust. And there's simply no faster, more powerful, or more effective way of eliciting those feelings toward you from others than by stepping outside yourself, moving what we would call moving from an I focus or me focus to an other focus. Or as Sam, one of the mentors, said to Joe, it's making your win about the other person's win.
And so it's all about this other focus.
Exactly.
So then now, how does that go into authenticity?
Well, the law of authenticity says the most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself. In the story, one of the mentors, Deborah Davenport, related an experience from early in her career in which she discovered that all the skills in the world, the sales skills, the technical skills, the people skills, as important as they are, and hey, you know, we know they are all important, they're also all for naught if you don't come at it from your true, authentic core. Now, when you do, when you show up as yourself, now people feel good about you. They feel comfortable with you. They know, like, and trust you. They want to be in relationship with you. They're much more likely to want to have you as a client and, or to have you as a consultant and be your client, and much more likely to refer you to others. I think the big thing about authenticity is simply knowing your strengths and understanding your strengths, because while we all need to know our weaknesses as well, and some of those weaknesses we need to mitigate, and others we can kind of ignore, and others we need to change into strengths. Basically, we lead with our strengths, and that's what we really bring to the table. So when we are aware of our strengths, now we can truly lead with our true, authentic
So, Bob, one of the challenges that so many consultants run into, and it's related to this whole notion of authenticity, is one of self-confidence, not being so confident in their core and their strengths, and therefore struggling to present a powerful, authentic self. So how would you advise folks to develop that confidence, or where do you think that comes from?
Well, it is, you're exactly right. It is all about confidence, because let's face it, if you really don't think you have anything of value to show up for, you can't show up authentically, because you'd feel you're, you know, going to lose business from it. And yet, if you try to show up inauthentically, you're still going to lose business from it. So it all begins with confidence. You know, obviously, we need to be competent regarding what we do. I mean, that's the core, because let's face it, when we say all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust, well, they've got to trust you both in terms of character, but they've also got to trust you in terms of competence.
Right.
Stephen M. R. Covey talks about that in his book, Speed of Trust. If you're not good at what you do, you shouldn't be confident. On the other hand, if you are good at what you do, you should be very confident. There's no reason not to be. But that's also why, you know, even as a consultant, it's good to have a coach, you know, someone like yourself who can help them identify their strengths. Because, you know, as human beings, we have a difficult time really embracing our strengths. And the reason is because we're so emotionally involved with ourselves. You know, I know myself. I still, you know, I'm 57 years old. I still look in the mirror sometimes and see that 16-year-old skinny kid, you know, who couldn't do anything right, and, you know, the whole thing. So we're too. So sometimes we need someone who can really say, you know, this is what you do so well, and this is really a strength of yours, and this is something to really lead with. And so you know, we need to know our stuff. We obviously need to know our pegs and shims, so to speak. And then we also need to be able to communicate that kind of confidence if we're going to be successful.
Yeah, well, clearly. And it's never, there's no profession that's more important than the profession of consulting,
oh,
that's for
absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Well, so let me take you off track for a moment. You mentioned that it's important to have someone to perhaps be in your corner to help you out, to give you a nudge in the right direction. And you talk about mentors a lot. Now, obviously, a lot of the people who are listening to this already use me as a mentor or might be considering joining one of the programs at some point. So given that, I'm going to ask you a dangerous question. Why do you think mentors are important? And what do you think someone should look for in a mentor or not look for?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and there's a couple types of different mentors. There are formal paid mentor-protege relationships, and those can be very, very valuable. I've certainly been the protege in those types of relationships, and I've also been the mentor in those types of relationships. And, you know, obviously when you pay to be part of a mentor group, so you are a paid protege, you are really getting the benefit of someone else's experience. You're also getting the benefit of someone who is not you being able to work with you. And that's so important, again, because it's so hard. It's like a psychiatrist analyzing themselves or a lawyer representing themselves. It doesn't matter how skilled they are. There's just too much emotional involvement when they are also the subject. You know what I'm saying? So that's why I think most great coaches have coaches. I think most great consultants have consultants. Most great, you know, mentors have mentors. So that's, you know, now I think when you look for a mentor in the type of formal mentor protege relationship, you're looking for someone who, again, has been there and done that. That's very important. But also someone who can teach, because just because someone is good at a certain skill doesn't mean they can teach it. There are many great athletes who make terrible coaches, and there are many scholars who make horrible teachers because they don't have the patience, they don't have the understanding, they don't have the empathy that not everyone starts out with their kind of abilities. So it's also good to have someone who is a good teacher. And then the other part is someone whose values are congruent with yours. Because this person can, you know, there are many ways to be successful financially. But if it's a way that is not congruent with your style or really with your values, then no, that wouldn't be the type of person to have.
So that's excellent. And so what should they, what should somebody not look for, do you think?
Well, I would say, you know, not looking for someone who really is just looking at you as a paycheck.
Right.
You know, they're not looking at you just as someone who's going to fill their cash machine. Their goal has got to be to provide you value. And again, hey, I am a free market capitalist. I believe you should be very, very well compensated for what you're doing. But remember, we also say that money is an echo of value. It's the thunder to value's lightning, which means the focus must be on providing value to your client. And when you do that, then the money follows as it should. And so, you know, you look for, so again, you don't want to be the protege to someone who, you know, whose values aren't congruent in that way.
Right. Boy, couldn't possibly agree more. Okay, before I've got a sort of an unusual twist I want to take this, but to be fair to everyone listening, let's make sure we hit that fifth law, which I think is receptivity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the law of receptivity says the key to effective giving is to stay open to receiving. You know, in the story, the main mentor, Pindar, asked Joe to breathe out and hold that breath to the count of 30, you know, the outgoing breath. It's a lot harder than it sounds. And in about 10 seconds, Joe is struggling for air and gasping for breath. And Pindar says, "What's the matter, Joe? Can't do it." Joe says, "No, I can't just breathe out. I've got to breathe in as well." And Pindar jokingly said, "Well, what if I was to tell you it's been medically proven that it's actually healthier to breathe out than it is to breathe in?" And Joe just laughed. He said, that's silly. You can't just breathe out or breathe in. You've got to do both. You've got to breathe out and breathe in." Well, of course, and we all know that. We all know that logically. And yet the messages we hear from the world all around us is that, you know, money is a bad thing and that people who are wealthy got there by hurting others or doing it on the backs of others and blah, 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 and, you know, the whole thing. So we have this lack of consciousness when it comes to money just from the messages we get from everywhere. And so what we've got to do is recognize and truly embrace that when you have given value to another, you have earned the right to receive. And as a consultant, when you have provided great value to someone's business or for whatever reason they're retaining you, you've earned the right to receive. So what we like to do is take people away from the what we call the treacherous dichotomy or the false dilemma, the or, you know, are you a giver or a receiver? And instead put them together and say you are a giver and a receiver. But we know that the focus needs to be on the giving of value. So we say, you know, focus on the giving and then allow the receiving because you've earned it. It is your right, not an entitlement. It's your right because you have provided value.
And that's excellent. And again, that's the flip side. So many consultants are uncomfortable, you know, making that ask.
Right. Well, because they're great at what they do, and they love helping, and they love serving, and they love the value they provide, and yet, you know, it can be very tough for a lot of consultants to ask for the money, to feel as though that's also a very legitimate part of what they're doing.
Exactly right. I deal with that all the time, especially in boutique firms with you know, engineers or technicians, or PhDs, and they feel like, you know, I went to school to solve these problems, not to ask for anything in return.
Exactly.
So seeing that as a right is terrific. Okay, let me turn this in an unusual direction. The focus of the book and the focus of our conversation is all about how we can be go-givers. But what if we flip that around? What if we try to help our clients become go-givers? What would be involved in that? What do you think would be the benefit of that to them and to us?
Well, we you know, my feeling would be we should absolutely try to have them do that, because what is being a go-giver? Being a go-giver simply means that you understand that when you shift your focus from yourself to serving your client, you're making yourself more valuable, and as a result, you're going to bring in more money. So being a go-giver is not something that's self-sacrificial. Being a go-giver is the most profitable way of doing business. So yeah, you know, we should be teaching you know, people who we consult for why being a go-giver is beneficial to them and beneficial doing their business.
So isn't that interesting? One of the ways we can give and think about our clients first is to actually help them learn to give first also.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I love that idea. So let's flip around again. What about misconceptions or myths around being a go-giver? Are there any that pop up frequently and we should be aware of?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, that's a great question. And I think that for most people, it's before they read the book because they see a title like The Go-Giver. And what comes to mind is, oh, just giving yourself away, you know. And, of course, that you know, or not caring about making a profit. And, of course, as we've discussed, that has nothing to do with it. Go-givers tend to make a very healthy profit. They tend to be at the higher end of the scale in terms of prices or fees because a go-giver understands that when you sell on low price, you're a commodity. When you sell on high value, you're a resource, a trusted resource. And go-givers are much more focused on the value they're providing. So, you know, as a go-giver, it's not about not making a profit. It's that you make a profit as a result of the phenomenal value you're providing others. And that's where your focus is. I think there's also a misconception that a go-giver has to say yes to everything and everyone, which of course would make it very difficult to be productive. because go-givers are typically very, very successful financially, so they're very busy. And you've got to usually say no. You got to say no a lot more than you say yes. But what a go-giver would do is when they say no, they would always say it with respect, they would say it with kindness, and they would do it in a way that the other person feels valued. So, you know, I think some people are, well, being a go-giver means you just kind of throw caution to the wind. You just go out there and do your thing knowing that the money will fall. No, not at all. You need to have a system. You need to have processes in place. You're in business, and you should be running it as a business. Go-giver simply means your focus is in the right place on the customer.
Right. So being other focused and saying, as I often say, it's about them, not you, doesn't mean it's only about them.
Right.
It's really about us as a partnership.
That's where your focus is, and that's what sets in motion the whole process.
Excellent. Now, what about someone who's not naturally other focused, or let's sort of call a spade a spade? I mean, there are people who just naturally aren't empathetic. Don't care that much about other people, don't think about them that much. How would you help them? How would you help them become go-givers? And are there exercises they can do that will help them sort of develop go-giver strengths, even though it's not a natural strength?
Well, the first thing that needs to happen is there needs to be an awareness, because let's face it, like anything else, and I'm sure everyone listening sees this in many of their own clients from time to time. If a person is not aware that they have a problem, or that there is a problem, they're not in a position to be able to do anything about it. So the first thing is the person has to understand that the way they're doing things now is not working for them, or is not working for them as productively as it could be. They may do okay, but if they understand that by doing things differently, they have a chance to really advance and really do even better, well, now they might be open to the idea. Okay, so that's the first part. They've got to first realize there's a problem or a situation or a challenge or an issue that needs to be fixed. Now, once you have that, now what you can do is you can help that person see why being a go-giver, running their business and their life the go-giver way, is going to be profitable for them. Now, what does profitable mean? Because when we say profit, we think of, you know, financial profit, and that's certainly one form of profit. But profit, and one of my old mentors, Harry Brown, used to define profit as simply an increase in happiness, the result of exchanging one situation for a better situation. So in everything we do as human beings, we do with the profit motive, okay? So again, that doesn't mean just the money motive, right, is important, but that's not always the thing.
It's more of a utility focus.
You're right. If we do what we believe is going to bring us happiness, okay? Every decision we make, we do it because we believe that this decision has a better chance of bringing us happiness than the opposite decision. So in that case, we can let this person know that even though that it's not something that they see as a natural way of doing things, that by doing this, by making the change and following the Go-Giver principles, it's going to be profitable for them financially and in all other ways. Now, so again, this ties into their natural feelings anyway, right? Because they would say, well, no, I care. They may not say this, but they're thinking, you know, I care about myself. I don't care, want to be a Go-Giver because I don't care about focusing on others. But if they understand that focusing on others is what's ultimately going to be profitable for them, now there's a chance they may do this. So now you teach them how, when you focus on another person. For example, I would say this, okay? Let's say you're working with a client in a certain industry, doesn't matter what that industry is in this case, but they are selling their service or their product to a customer. And so you let them know this. Let's say you are selling your product or service to a customer. You're doing the sales presentation. In what way do you think this person's going to be much more likely to buy from you? Let's say you go in there and you are presenting to this person, not caring about them, not being empathetic to them, not focused on them, but really just wanting their money. You may ask them questions, but really you're not listening to what they're saying. You're really trying to more sharp angle them into a good close. And they can tell by the way you're doing things that really you're in it for yourself. Are they going to be more likely or less likely to buy from you? And, you know, the chances are they're going to say less likely, of course. Right. And you say, now let's imagine you're in a sales situation and now you are totally focused on bringing value to this person. You are asking them questions to genuinely determine their needs, wants, and desires. You're listening to their answers, not just to close them, but to really be able to understand. You're paying attention to them. You are being empathetic to what issues they may have. In other words, they know your focus is on them, not on the money. Are they going to be more likely to buy from you now or less likely? And they'll say, well, you know, more likely. Well, okay, so now they understand why it's more profitable for them to take the focus off themselves and put it on another person. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that'd be terrific. And if only people would act rationally, it would even be more perfect.
Right, exactly.
Right. So if only people actually did act in a way that traded them for better long-term results, all our lives would be easier. But I think you're right. What we see for ourselves and for our clients and for our colleagues is that if we can have them experience that change, what you did is you walked them through an exercise of imagine if, and maybe if they can see that change, they'll be more likely to embrace it. Let me just ask, because I know we're starting to get crunched on time. We've covered a lot of the aspects of your book, which, of course, I highly recommend everybody get. Is there something that you would love to cover that you think this audience would find particularly valuable that we didn't cover?
No, I think you've asked some fantastic questions. No wonder you're a great consultant.
There you go. let me ask one more then. Because you've obviously provided terrific value, and so now it is your right to receive something for providing all this value. So what's your ask? What would you love from me and from all the folks listening to this?
Really just to visit the website, which is burg.com, B-U-R-G.com. And if you go to the where it says Influence and Success Insights and put your email address there, you can subscribe. And you'll receive the chapter one of The Go-Giver and of a couple of my other books, so you can see if you like them. My suggestion would be to get the Go-Giver, because I think that will help in the consulting business, and you also might want to give some of those as gifts to your consulting clients if you feel it might add value to them and make for a good upcoming holiday season gift.
I'm sure everyone can do that. I am so appreciative of you being willing to share your insights and your wisdom and your experience with my community. I find it incredibly valuable. I know everyone else will too. So thank you so much.
David, I appreciate you. I always enjoy speaking with you. Thanks for everything you do.
Likewise. Take care, bud.